Hello and welcome into episode 34 of the Calcio Connection podcast, connecting with you Italian football fans from all over the world. I am Alex Dono, and I've already explained to my wife, and I'm going to try to explain to my two-year-old son as best I can, that come June 20th, between June 20th and August 2nd, there are Serie A games on every single day. I'm going to have very little time for family. You've got to understand that. After, you know, the past 3 months, I've spent nothing but family time. It's time for some me time coming up. So we are anxiously awaiting the return of Calcio, which is going to happen first with Coppa Italia on the 13th and 14th, and then Serie A on the 20th. And I am joined, as always, by Jerry Mancini, my co-host. Jerry, I know you've gotten very much into Bundesliga in recent weeks. You actually told me you might ditch Serie A for the Bundesliga. What kind of traitorous scum are you?
I'm getting a free flow for this league, and there's a lot of good talent. It's keeping me busy. I feel like I've invested so much time that the amount of writing I've done for the Bundesliga, I feel that I've been watching it all my life, but really that hasn't been the case. But obviously, Serie A is my my passion, and I'm happy that I'm still keeping myself writing and not being so incomplacent, and I'm going to be ready for the Serie A when it starts. But I'm just happy that the games are at 3:45 in our local time here, because for me, I'm working Tuesday to Saturday, so there are the afternoon games I might miss, but the later games I'm able to watch, and a lot of Lazio games are going to be at 3:45. And the Portuguese league actually kicked off again yesterday, and I want to just give a little jab at my buddy Rui, that his shit-ass team Porto lost yesterday. and I never had an interest for this league until I found out that he likes Porto. So I'm going to cheer for Benfica just to create a little rivalry here and just to jab it at him. And I'm hoping
what a friend you are. You can't adopt your friend's team. You have to adopt the rival. What kind of a shitbag are you, Jerry?
Oh, it makes it more interesting, just the competitiveness. I love it. I just want to... And he likes Milan, for God's sake, man. Milan! Like, freaking... Oh, Milan. I was writing about Andre Silva yesterday. I released an article today about him. And isn't it curious that he had a great season with Porto. He's been playing well with Frankfurt. And he had a decent season last year with Sevilla. But for some reason, it just didn't work with Milan. Like, is it me, or is it just Milan just ruins players instead of players ruining themselves at Milan?
A lot of times it's Milan. Well, let me introduce our special guest for this episode. I don't think this guy has a whole lot of love for Milan, and I know Jerry is certainly fine with this. This man is one of the most prolific on Calcio Twitter, and he runs one of my favorite YouTube channels, Raul Sharma, but you know him as Uncle Sharma. Sharma, how you doing today, sir?
Yo, very honored to be on. Very good. Thank you very much.
We're so happy to have you. And you know, guys, something that a player we wanted to talk quite a bit about on this episode, there's a big development in his future earlier today. Now, you've heard me say this name a lot on this podcast, because even though I've seen him linked to Inter before, I was never that confident, because I thought he was sure to end up at Liverpool because there's been so much contact. But I'm talking about Timo Werner from RB Leipzig. And a very interesting development about an hour before we started recording this here on Thursday is that Chelsea has come in and made a big surprise bid for Werner for north of 60 million euros. And, you know, a lot of football accounts on Twitter were writing as if the deal is done, he's going to Chelsea, and maybe he will end up there. But a little bit of clarification from Fabrizio Romano, who we know is one of the transfer gurus. Like, when this guy speaks, or when, you know, Di Marzio speaks, you listen. Fabrizio tweeted, "Liverpool still haven't started official talks with Leipzig for Werner. They always asked for time. Only talks were with the player via Klopp. Chelsea are ready with an official bid, and if Liverpool will not match it on the next hours, Werner will discuss his contract with Chelsea." So it sounds to me like Liverpool is on the clock here. And unfortunately, maybe by the time a lot of you listen to this, we already have kind of a result in these sweepstakes. But it sounds like Chelsea are very ready to swipe Werner away from Liverpool, and of course away from Inter also. Now, Sharma, I want to start with you on this one. I guess people should never underestimate Chelsea, given what a rich club they are. And as Jerry has pointed out to me a lot, coming off the transfer ban, they've been able to save a lot of their cash for a move like this. But when you think about Timo Werner, because I know you've watched him a lot, when you talk about clubs like Chelsea, Liverpool, or even Inter, do you think Chelsea is a place for him to maximize his talent? Which of those clubs do you think he would fit in with best?
Yeah, I mean, Werner is one of those players where I kind of have to eat my words. Your good friend, Creedy Smith, who was on last week, he was a big proponent of Timo Werner from very early on. And we used to have a discussion about him. He used to say, you know, he should come to Inter. And I never really, not to say I didn't rate him, but I didn't think technically he was at that level. And obviously, you know, he's gone on to improve a lot more over the last few years, and he's become what he's become now. But I think if he came to the Serie A, it's not the league for him. He's a player that plays very much, you know, with his pace and with space, and that's just not something that you get to use in the Serie A with the more, you know, defenses are more tactically balanced. And I think the Premier League is going to be the perfect league for him. Maybe Liverpool would have been slightly the better option for him because Nagelsmann's footballing style is very much similar to Klopp's style, very much, you know, with the high pressing and very high chance creation. Frank Lampard's Chelsea is still kind of, you know, finding their feet. They're still finding the philosophy. But he's definitely going to get a lot more playing time at Chelsea compared to Liverpool. You know, I'm not sure if he would take Firmino out of the starting 11 for Liverpool. Whereas at Chelsea, you know, with Giroud there, Batshuayi, you know, I think that there's definitely room there for someone to take the starting spot. Tammy Abraham, of course, he did really well last year, but, you know, he's still a raw talent. And I think Timo Werner's going to thrive at Chelsea and in the Premier League.
Very well said. And now, Jerry, in the last 2 weeks, you have adopted RB Leipzig as your Bundesliga club. So you've watched Werner. You do support Chelsea. You've been a Chelsea supporter for a few years. So this story very much centers around your life, my friend. Chelsea seemingly came out of nowhere with this bid for Timo. So your thoughts on this deal and how do you see this guy fitting in with Chelsea?
Well, the one thing I think that Frank Lampard has to accept that this player can play in any position on any given day. So he's shown to play as a striker. He plays on the wing. He plays in the midfield, center forward, you name it, in a 4-3-3, a 4-4-2, all different formations. He's adapted in so many ways, and he plays a free-flow kind of game with Leipzig under Julian Nagelsmann. And I feel that with Nagelsmann has allowed him to let him play his own game, free flow. And that's something that would be interesting to see if Frank Lampard will be okay with, because with the English league, it's much more a run and gun, very competitive, more, I would say, more positional compared to the Bundesliga. I feel that these players don't all play in their position, and it's more of a free flow kind of game, whereas Serie A and the EPL are more tactical. Serie A is on a much higher level of tactability, but with the EPL, you still have some really good players, and you need to be really positionally found. So you got a player that's very versatile and can give Chelsea so many options on the field. If Tammy Abraham can score goals in a game, he can slot in as a number 9. He can slot in as a false number 9 behind him. He could play as a number 10. He could play on the wing. Like, there's just, he gives Frank Lampard what he was missing this year. Someone who can step up and gives him an extra option off the bench or as a starter. So I'm very surprised that Liverpool haven't pulled the trigger yet. Maybe the fact that Chelsea is more financially stable compared to what Liverpool is right now. The fact that Chelsea didn't spend any money really in the summer transfer window because they had the ban. And this past window, they only bought one player. So they haven't really spent a lot of money in the past year, and they have an advantage. And who would have thought that a transfer ban may have actually helped the club, foreseeing what the circumstances clubs are in right now. Had they had been big spenders last summer, because we know how Chelsea is, they're not scared to open up the bank book. But the fact that they were limited, maybe this really has helped the club, and good fortune has paid off. So who knows? But at the end of the day, this is a player that many clubs would love, and Chelsea came in out of nowhere and is making a big move right now. And I just saw a tweet from Matt Law where he confirmed that the deal is done, but I don't know how much to buy into that. But it's interesting to see. Yeah, Matt Law says that Timo Werner has agreed to join Chelsea, more to come. But I don't know how reputable Matt Law is compared to Gianluca Di Marzio.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a thing where, it was Sky certainly didn't say it's not going to happen. They just basically said now Liverpool is on the clock to try and match it. So, yeah, I would not doubt a report that it's done, because things, I'm sure, are moving quickly now. And I think both of you gentlemen made a great point that with Werner, his game fits much better with the Premier League than it does with Serie A. And I never really took the Serie A links that seriously. I mean, it was primarily Inter and a little bit of Juve, because Inter and Juve always get linked to the same players, you know, when someone's after someone. And I thought that was probably more wishful thinking than anything else. Like, hey, if we need a striker, this guy's out there and he's really good. I don't think there was ever much more to it than fans just wanting him. I think him ending up in the Premier League and now it seems like with Chelsea makes a lot of sense to me. But I do want to get to some Serie A with you guys. Since Sharma's nice enough to join us, I would love to hear your Scudetto pick. Now, I think we have to assume here, for argument's sake, that they finish all the fixtures, right? Like, let's assume the league doesn't have to go back into quarantine and either just name a champion or do some kind of a weird playoff. Like if every team finishes their fixtures, I'd love to hear your Scudetto pick. And kind of as an aside to that, something I've noticed, Mr. Sharma, is that a lot of folks don't even bring up Inter in the Scudetto conversation. And I guess I can understand why, being 9 points off technically, but with the game in hand and having recently lost to Juve and to Lazio. But I look at the remaining schedule, and with 13 match days left, and it could be a 6-point deficit if they win their game in hand. Like that to me, it looks far from impossible. Like with 13 games left to play, if it's a 6 or a 9-point deficit, do you think it's fair that people are counting Inter out of it?
No, I don't think it is, because we've played our big matches. Let's say, as you said, like the schedule now is almost on a downward trajectory, if you could say so. We've played Juventus twice already. We've played Lazio already. So, you know, the contenders we've already played. So we're playing against the sort of, so to say, weaker teams. But, you know, the depth, I think, is going to be the key factor in the next few matches, in the next few weeks, because the matches are so close to each other every 3 or 4 days. It's crazy. It's going to be a summer of football. And I think the squad depths are really going to be challenged. And I think Juve and Inter have slight bit more of a squad depth compared to Lazio. Sorry, Jerry. But it's just the fact that, you know, Juventus, obviously, we know their squad depth is just crazy. They could have two teams that could challenge for the Scudetto almost. And obviously now there's no Champions League in between. So I think their squad is going to come into his own. Whereas Lazio, you know, if Immobile gets injured or Joaquin Correa gets injured, you know, there's really not that much depth behind there. Well, I guess you could say that for the striking options for Inter, because after Lukaku and Lautaro, we only have Sanchez and Esposito. But for the rest of the team, we have, you know, two or three players for each spot. So I think we shouldn't count Inter out yet. And especially under Antonio Conte, he's not going to let go of the title race that easily.
You know, Jerry, something I want your take on is, you were panicking a little bit earlier today, and I don't blame you, because there are reports out there that Sergei Milinkovic-Savic is having trouble with his knee and is going to undergo an MRI. Obviously, you know, we hope it's nothing serious, but, you know, his immediate return is in doubt, and that would be a very, very tough blow to Lazio's starting 11 and to Lazio's depth, no question about that. And we're already seeing reports of Gonzalo Higuain being hurt in training for Juventus. You know, I've seen headlines today for Inter that there are guys struggling with their fitness and with nagging injuries, including Matias Vecino and seemingly every center back not named Milan Skriniar. Everyone else is struggling with something. But, you know, Jerry, when you see that report that you saw, and you actually brought this to my attention this morning about Milinkovic-Savic, have you heard anything more on that? And how big of a blow would that be if he has to miss some time?
Well, that would be a big blow, and that's something actually that Sean basically brings a good point. And then if you lose Luis Alberto, or I honestly think that losing Luis Alberto is a bigger loss than Savic. Personally, that's just not the way I feel, and there might be a lot of people who might think differently, but just losing one of the two does hurt because they don't have another serviceable player to step in and replace either of these players in the time being, whereas Inter does have a lot of depth in midfield. They have a lot of depth in the back end, where Lazio does really struggle in these areas if one player does go down. And that's something where I have kept a blind eye on, and where I really need to be more realistic and say, okay, well, we do have a Cataldi who can step up, but Cataldi is nowhere the same level of where Savic or Alberto are at. And then you have, if Immobile goes down, yeah, Caicedo is good, but is he going to be enough to help with 12 games remaining or whatever it may be? And if Joaquin Correa goes down, there's another big loss. So the one thing that Inzaghi has done well this year, given the fact that he's had more time to prepare in his matches, is that when someone has gotten hurt, someone has stepped up for this club, and a lot of unsung heroes. We've seen Caicedo score 2 pivotal goals this year in extra time. Name it, if it's not goals, it's Acerbi providing good leadership in the back end. You have, I remember against Brescia, where Luis Alberto missed a match due to an injury, or he picked up a second yellow card. He had serving a suspension, but he didn't play, and they really struggled, but they figured out a way to win the game. But Savic is going to be a big loss. But at the end of the day, without Luis Alberto, I feel that the team is really missing that creativity, that flow of being able to bring the ball up field, create any attack when they have possession. Whereas Savic is more of a defensive kind of player. He can do both. He is really good with his feet and everything, but that spark of what Luis Alberto has brought to the team, and when he's not in the game, they lack any cohesiveness, anything to like create any of that feel to help this team generate anything. And if Luis Alberto is to get hurt at any time, I think that's the bigger loss.
You know, I look at the way things might play out if they can finish all these fixtures. I wonder if, looking back at the 2020 Scudetto winner, whoever that may be, if there's always going to be kind of an asterisk by it, because, you know, these guys haven't trained in a group for almost 3 months, and now they're getting thrown right back into it where they're playing games every 3 or 4 days. To me, it's a recipe for disaster. Like, you might see some of these clubs having to finish the season with like Primavera players in the starting 11s for some of these teams. Like, it's going to be attrition, and it may come down to a little bit of luck, some good bounces. Like, if there is, you know, if one of these teams in the top three is lucky enough to finish the next month and a half without any major injuries, they may end up being kind of the Scudetto winner by default. So this is just, it's going to be such a weird, weird year. But something else I want to get to, and Jerry and I, you know, have talked a lot about this player over the last couple of months, almost too much, to be honest with you. But I would love Sharma's take on Lautaro Martinez, as it's like a soap opera with this guy, man. Like, every day it's like, oh, Barca is reportedly offering 50 million euros plus a pot of paella plus Junior Firpo. It's like all these reports are crazy. Then no, Inter is holding out. They only want 111 million euros. It's got to be the release clause or nothing. Then I'm reading today that Barcelona, their books are not balanced. They're 154 million euros in debt, and there's no way they can afford Lautaro unless they make serious sales. Do you think that he ends up at Barca in this upcoming transfer window, or do you think it's looking more and more like he'll be at Inter for at least another year?
Yeah, I think he'll be at Inter at least another year. I've been saying it from the beginning, but, you know, so all these reports are starting to weigh me down. But I just don't see it in this current economy, this post-COVID economy or whatever you want to call it. You know, Barcelona being able to spend that much on a player and, you know, the wages that have been rumoured as well. They're saying, you know, they're going to give him 12 million a year, you know, a top player wage that is. And yeah, like every other day, there's a different player that they're offering to us. Apparently, one day's Firpo, Semedo, Griezmann. I think they've linked every single Barcelona player apart from Messi.
Yeah, that's right.
It's crazy. So I think even for him in the career as a career move, it makes sense to stay one more year at Inter. Still, you know, he's not even had a season where he's hit 20 goals yet. So I think he still has that one more year that where he can prove himself. And yeah, I see him staying, to be honest.
Yeah, and you know, Jerry, I think a lot about what Sharma just said. And this is something we talked to Critty Smith about this in a recent episode. And like Jerry, I thought he made a great point that you look at what Barcelona can do to some players where if you're not ready for that sort of a move, it can just chew you up and spit you out. And yeah, does Lautaro, when he's on his day, look like he is or can be world-class? Absolutely. But at 22 years old, not having proved a whole lot yet, you have to wonder if maybe holding off for another year or two to make a move like that might be in his best interest. I mean, looking back on some of these conversations we've had, Jerry, what do you think is the right move for Lautaro? Should he make this move if at all possible, or maybe not push for it?
Well, he's only played a total of, 66 games with Inter at the top flight. Before this, he played for Racing Club, and he only accumulated 60 matches there. He doesn't have a lot of experience to be playing at that as for a club such as Barcelona, I feel. And I think he's making a big decision. At the age of 22, you're being coached by, as much as I hate him, one of the best coaches in football, Antonio Conte. You can learn a lot from him. You have the pieces here that can make you into a better player. And Critty does provide another good point where if you fail, you're not only failing Barcelona, you're failing Messi. And Messi will make you burn if you go into his bad books. You won't be playing for Argentina, like what happened to Icardi. And there can be a lot of bad outcomes if it doesn't work out for him with Barcelona. There's a lot of pressure, very high expectations. And a lot of players who fail to perform at Barcelona don't always go on to have good careers. So for me, I think this is the best place. He's flourishing really well in his second season. He's already got 11 goals in the league. He scored 6 last year. He's developing his play. He's becoming such a complete striker. He's partnered up well with Romelu Lukaku. The two have created a good chemistry, that bond that they know how to like link up with each other. I think he's making a big mistake leaving. Personally, the problem is, and he's a young guy, 22. He in the back of his head is like, oh, I get to play with Messi. I get to play with Messi. Yeah, you should have. It would have been different 5 years ago. Messi in his prime, and I'm not saying I love Messi. I think he's still a great player, but you're playing with Messi at the back end of his career now.
Right, you're right. I mean, he's still in his prime, but he's on the back nine.
Yeah. You going there? You're gonna see him for 2 years, maybe, if lucky. I don't know. He could be playing until he's 40, Messi. Who knows? But those are big question marks that you have to decide. Are you gonna like take that on?
There was a video. There was a video that I released I posted on my Twitter a few weeks ago. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was an interview of Lautaro from his days at Racing when he was like 18, 19, and he says in that video that, you know, Barcelona is his favorite European club. He thinks Suarez is the best striker in the world and Messi is his favorite player and all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of, you know, it's one of those things, especially with South Americans. It's, you know, when Real Madrid or Barcelona come calling, it's very difficult to say no.
And as kind of a follow-up to that, Sharma, and I really respect your knowledge and your breakdown on players. Like, you do such a good job on your YouTube channel, and I know that, like any Interista, you've watched Lautaro so closely, and just the way that we've seen him mesh with Lukaku in that strike partnership, when these guys are on, it's really something I enjoy watching. Now, now if Lautaro does go to Barca, Inter is going to have a lot of money in exchange. They're going to have full pockets of euros if that were to happen, which is great. But I'd love your take on how difficult he would actually be to replace, because having that money in your pocket is one thing, but spending that money on a great striker who can mesh with a guy like Lukaku in a partnership, you know, might not be so automatic. So if Lautaro were to go, how difficult would it be to actually replace him? And are there maybe any players that stand out that might be available who you think could actually do a good job filling that hole?
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult, and not just because of Lautaro himself as a player, but because of just the lack of, you know, alternatives in world football. Like, you know, that second striker position that Lautaro plays in is not a position that, you know, many teams play with. So whoever's going to come in, first of all, is going to have to adapt himself, because, you know, if you look around world football, there's not many players you can say, you know, second striker in that type of mold that Conte likes. You know, with the Italy team, he had Eder. You know, at Juve, he had like the likes of Jovinko, Vucinic. You know, he likes these types of guys that have a little bit more freedom compared to the main striker. And it's really hard to find someone in the world football. I think that's why Werner was, you know, linked to us so strongly, because he really fits that mold. He's, you know, a player that started his career off as a winger and then kind of moved in a little bit more as a striker. He can play the whole, that front position. But apart from, you know, Timo Werner, Antoine Griezmann, you know, there's not many players I can think of that can, you know, fit in straight away. So anyone that comes in will have to be, you know, either a winger who adapts, and that's why I think we've been linked with that, Cunha, Mateus Cunha from Hertha Berlin recently. You know, an exciting winger that, you know, can play up front, good 1v1. And yeah, apart from that, I like Richarlison from Everton. I think he fits that kind of mold of a second striker. Similar to Mateus Cunha, but of course Everton in Premier League, that means he'll cost you an eye and a leg. But yeah, apart from Werner and a few other players, I really don't see straight ready-made alternatives. So either Conte would look to change the formation to what he did at Chelsea, where, you know, he went with a more of a 3-4-3 or 3-4-2-1, as you want to put it, where he'll adapt, you know, maybe Eriksen or someone else to come in and fill that gap, and then have one more winger type player, like a Sanchez or like a Politano was supposed to be, or, you know, how Willian and Hazard did for his Chelsea team. Or he goes in and, you know, tries to mold someone who's more of a traditional striker and tries to, you know, find a way to make it work. But yeah, it's a really difficult decision that we're going to have to make if Lautaro leaves.
And a shout out to Jerry, by the way. We've had Jerry on Timo Werner duty as we've been recording. And Jerry, Jerry, you've been finding more and more reports that are seemingly confirming that Werner has agreed to join Chelsea, right?
Yeah, I'm part of a Chelsea group, actually, I write for. And they keep on sending the links and everything. So this is from Matt Law on Twitter. He tweeted along this article from his tweet that had been confirmed, and now he's actually reporting it. And it seems as if Timo Werner is on his way to Chelsea. And I don't know, I'm not a financial guy, everything about this stuff and all the terms, but it seems as if he has agreed to join Chelsea, who are on the verge of tying up a deal to sign the forward from Red Bull Leipzig. And it's being revealed by Telegraph Sport. So I'm guessing this is a reputable site.
They're probably reporting someone else's info, so it could be reputable, exactly. Maybe not.
But now that he's off the market, let's say, would a guy like Kai Havertz intrigue Antonio Conte? Because Havertz, I've gotten to watch a few of his matches since the resume of the Bundesliga, and this guy has a really... He's really tenacious. He's really hungry in the goal area. He can really score goals. And last Friday, I forgot who they played, but he scored a beautiful goal on the side of the box. And his individual effortness, like the way he just works so hard to score and never gives up on the play. This is a type of Antonio Conte player that I would think that they're probably they're doing their homework based on him and thinking maybe this is a player we can bring to Inter who can really come off the bench in place of Lukaku or Martinez. And if the fact that if they even did sell Martinez, he could be a good replacement as well. He's still young.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, Sharma?
Yeah, he's a generational talent, yeah. But I don't see him being an Antonio Conte type player, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. Well, and speaking on, I want to talk one more Inter player before we move on to a couple of topics outside of Inter.
Conte?
Well, Jerry, you've already praised Conte today, so I think we're done. We got Jerry to actually say something nice about Conte. My work here is done.
You can't disregard when stats are true, when he's won that much. I just don't like – the only one aspect I always say is I just don't like the way he's a bitch. That's it. Other than that, if he can get rid of that little bitchy part of his game that he shows, I would have from 90% to 100% respect for him. But that 10% is always going to be lost at the moment.
Well, I want to get Sharma's take on Christian Eriksen, because he's been a really interesting case study, just the way he's been covered. I know that a lot of Tottenham fans were sick of the guy by the end of his run there. They didn't like his attitude. They wanted him out. And he's been, I think, pretty negatively covered since arriving at Inter, because didn't find a whole lot of playing time and didn't make a huge impact on the pitch. But my take has been since he arrived, I mean, here's a guy who arrived at the very end of the January transfer window, had no time whatsoever to adapt to a new squad or a new league for that matter. And he wasn't getting many opportunities to play from the start. So I just kind of look at what happened from late January to early March, very short amount of time. And I don't think Conte really had the necessary time to sort of carve out a role for him. And Eriksen didn't have the necessary time to figure out how to play under Conte or to figure out how to play in the Serie A. So I know it sounds like I'm making a gigantic excuse and maybe people will see it that way. But I just think it's too soon to really judge what Eriksen can bring to Inter. And I find it interesting the way people have reported on this with zero patience. But I mean, Sharma, well, what do you think it's going to take, either from Conte's formation or from Eriksen having to adapt to it, for him to really maximize his talents and look like the world-class player he was a couple seasons ago?
Yeah, you're right. He's definitely a world-class player, top five playmakers in the world for me. When you just look at his stats from his Premier League time, he had the most chances created since 2013-14, more than Mesut Ozil, more than Eden Hazard, more than David Silva. So, you know, you can't doubt the guy's chance-creating ability. He was first in chances created, assists, big chances created. In terms of, obviously, yeah, you said the coverage from the media has not been nice, but which Inter player is ever covered nicely by the Italian media?
Great point.
You could look at, you know, the coverage of Rabiot in contrast. He should have had a much, much worse reception by the media for the amount of money that he was paid and the amount that the little he's contributed to the Juve team. But you don't see much written about him. But poor Eriksen, who's had like six appearances, seems to be take the brunt of the criticism. But there was an interview a couple of weeks ago that Conte did with Sky Sports in the UK. I don't know if you saw it. He was talking about how a coach should be like a tailor, and he should tailor the suit around his players, so to say. And I haven't really, you know, thinking about it afterwards, I was like, he's not really done that Inter yet. Like, he's kind of forced the team into his own image for the moment. And even as in his history, he doesn't really strike me as a coach who tailors his tactics around the team. He really is probably the other way around for me. And I think that's what's happened with Eriksen. You know, he's not really, obviously Eriksen's best position is that central attacking midfielder position, that trequartista role. And it's a role that's kind of dying now. It doesn't really exist in modern football. And the only way that he's going to be able to integrate Eriksen properly is if he either plays a 3-4-1-2 formation or the 4-3-1-2 formation, which he never plays. There were reports saying that this week he was tried out in training, but I don't really see it happening. Conte.
Yeah, and, I saw that.
Yeah, Conte moving away from a 3-defender formation. I'm not seeing that happening. We saw that, you know, he's similar to like Sensi in terms of, you know, his style of play, but he's definitely, his final ball is a lot more, you know, is higher quality, definitely. But he needs a free role. You can't really shackle him down to a position on the pitch. At Tottenham, he was actually playing, you know, as a false winger, you could say, because in the 4-2-3-1, Dele Alli was the one that was playing the CAM role, but almost as a second striker, because he was, you know, really good at making those late runs into the box. So Eriksen was kind of given that free role that he would come in from that right-hand side and kind of go wherever he wants. So I think Conte needs to give him a little bit of that freedom here. You know, a player like Eriksen needs that freedom. He's a painter. He's an artist. You can't shackle him down and give him certain instructions. But obviously, Eriksen also has to provide that off the ball intensity that Conte loves. He comes from the Pochettino system, which is also a very high pressing, intense system. But you know, when he was the few matches that he's played at Inter, he hasn't shown that intensity off the ball. So, you know, on both sides, there definitely needs to be some adaptation from Conte and from Eriksen.
Well said. I think they've got to meet in the middle. And, you know, when you talk about training reports, for what it's worth, saw some reports today, Thursday, as we tape this, that supposedly Eriksen has looked fantastic in training this week and has carved himself out a starting role for the Coppa Italia match. But really, I mean, starting in that match, I don't know if that's a reward or a punishment, because it sounds like Inter wants nothing to do now with this Coppa Italia, with all the extra games they have to play now if they were to go to the Coppa final. But Jerry, I'll give you the last word on Eriksen, because I know that this is a player you've been pretty fascinated with since he arrived at Inter. You know, do Sharma and I sound reasonable when we talk about him, you know, needing more time and Conte needing to adapt a little bit, or do you look at this guy as just maybe for whatever reason not being the player he was a couple of years ago? How do you see it?
Well, I was just thinking about this and looking at his background, because I'm gonna be honest, if I don't know a player so well, I'm very straight to the point. I've never watched him a lot other than his short time with Inter. Think about getting married, okay? Would you just meet a woman or a guy, whatever gender you are? You meet somebody, and after let's just say that Christian Eriksen met you 4 times and decided to marry you. Doesn't make no sense. You need to it doesn't make no sense. You need to understand the person. You need to build that chemistry, that foundation. And then you start to love each other, and then you eventually get into the stages of marriage. And everything builds. There's building blocks.
This is my own Tinder.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Conte swiped right, or is it left? I don't even know. He swiped, right. And then there they are.
And here you go. That he spent 7 seasons with Tottenham. It didn't happen in 1 year where he just became this good player for the club. He had to develop himself, understand the system. Yes, there have been changes with management probably once or twice. Probably once, because Pochettino's probably been there for so many years, I've lost count. But he has developed that chemistry with Pochettino, understood how he plays, his formation, everything that is expected of him. He had a role. With Inter, he needs to build that relationship with Conte now, like a marriage, where he comes in, there's the baby steps, then you understand more, and then there's the role for him, and you got that foundation that they're bonded together. And that's something that Conte and Eriksen need to establish. You're not going to be able to come into Inter in 4 matches, bang, just like that, you got what it has. And no, you can't judge a player based on 4 appearances in the league. There's not enough time to like equip yourself to the 3-5-2 of Conte's expectations and how he thinks and what he wants from his players. And these things don't happen overnight. And yeah, he's a veteran. He's played over. He's played 226 games with in the Premier League. He's played with Ajax 113 appearances. But again, those are two different leagues compared to the way that Serie A plays and how they are more tactical, more different fundamentally. And these are things that Christian Eriksen needs to adapt to, that the Italian league is much different than the EPL. So there's just so many factors to put in that you have to give them at least a season and a half. Then you can start judging, did it work, did it not work? Don't go off of 1 month and all of a sudden Conte's writing this guy off. If he does that, I'd be very upset, because this guy has proven to score so many goals. He's been vital in the midfield. He can really change a game when needed. I thought when he came off the bench against Lazio, he looked okay. He was creating opportunities for Inter. So this is a player that has the desire to score, to work hard and help his team when needed.
You know, moving on, a player who's become a big topic of conversation this week is Milan's Ismail Benacer, who Milanisti love this guy. I rate him. I think he's had a good campaign. But now he's potentially being linked elsewhere. Now, he's got a 50 million euro release clause. Now, if Man City is the squad that's reportedly interested in him, apparently Pep Guardiola has been sliding into his DMs a little bit. So if it did come down to the 50 million release clause being activated, obviously that wouldn't really be Milan's choice to let him go. And after buying him for around 16 million plus bonuses last year, they'd make a hefty profit on that. But, not surprisingly, you see reports that, you know, Man City, they like him, but the 50 million release clause, it's a lot of money in this COVID-19 economy. So they may try to negotiate for less. So, you know, Sharma, I'll ask you, and then I'll ask Jerry as well. If it did come down to maybe, you know, Man City not going as high as the release clause, but maybe offering Milan 35, 40 million for Benacer, do you think Milan should think about selling and making the profit, or should they try to hold on to this guy at all costs?
I think, in terms of what they are going to do, I think they would jump at the chance of getting that such a big plus valenza for Benacer just after 1 year. I think the way Elliot have come in, they're looking to, you know, sort out the finances first of AC Milan. But if it was me, I would try to hold on to Benacer for sure. I think he's one of the best deep lying playmakers in the league, if not, you know, top two, top three after Brozovic. You know, he was number one in terms of dribbles completed, which is very impressive for someone that plays in such a sensitive part of the pitch. And he would fit like a glove at Man City as well under the Pep playing style. But, you know, Milan need to start building the team around a core of players. They can't just change, you know, project every single year. They need to start building, you know, they need to pick the spine, you know, if they're going to keep Donnarumma, Romagnoli, Benacer, that spine, you know, pick four or five players they're going to build a team around. They can't just every year change the project, change coach, change sporting director. They need to find some consistency in their project. Like, it's, they need to stop moving so mad. They need to sort themselves out.
You know, and I want to ask you a follow-up, but I think maybe you might have at least partially answered this question, because I think you made a great point about what Elliot seems looking to do, and the priority is more on profit than it is in really building for the future. But if they were to sell Benacer for a big sum and make a big plusvalenza, could you then see them as a potential landing spot for Sandro Tonali, or would selling Benacer just to buy Tonali, who would be even more expensive, not really make much sense given what Elliot's trying to do? But I know that a lot of Milanisti are hopeful in landing Tonali, since he is a Milanista, although he seems to be favoring, you know, the projects of Inter and Juve over Milan at this point. But, you know, to make a long question short, if Milan were to sell Benacer and make a big profit, could you then potentially see them as a spot for Tonali to land?
Nah, I don't think Milan under Elliot are going to make those kind of massive purchases. I think when if they sell Bennacer, they're going to go for another Bennacer type purchase, you know, someone around maybe 30 million max. But, you know, they're going for these young players that can be sold in the future. You know, Gazidis is their CEO now, and you can see what he did at Arsenal. You know, they as soon as, you know, a player gains a certain value, they sell him. They buy young players, develop them, and then sell them on. And I think that's what Milan are going to be for a few years. And then Tonali, even if they did, let's say they did try to get Tonali, I don't think Tonali would be convinced by a project where, you know, you don't even know who the coach is. Is it going to be Ralf Rangnick or is it going to be Pioli? Yeah, who is going to be the sporting director? Like, you know, there's so much uncertainty at Milan. Whereas at Inter, you know the deal. You know Antonio Conte. You know he's gonna mold you. He's definitely gonna develop you. He's got a history, a track record of improving young Italian players. You know the team is on the way up. You know the wages are gonna be higher at Inter as well. You know you're gonna have Champions League. I think it's a no-brainer. If I was Tonali, I wouldn't be swayed by Milan right now.
You know, Jerry, I know Milan is your favorite club on the planet. Do you think they should sell Bennacer? Like, what do you think his future holds in the red and black?
So, looking at his history, this is his first big club that he's played for with Milan. Empoli, he had a decent year last year with Empoli. And I just think that if you're able to make this much money, even if it's 40 million, I take the money, especially in the financial situation that they're in. They have already made a lot of bad signings in Lucas Biglia. Andre Silva hasn't worked out for them. And they just have so much money tied up. They need to get back to cleaning their books. And as much of a player you can build around him, I think if the opportunity presents itself and you can make X amount of money on him, I think you're in a situation that... And especially if it's like a profit for them, you have to take it. So at the end of the day, I do think he's a good player. Is this someone you build around? I don't know. But at the end of the day, when you're in a financial situation, you take the money. And who's to say that he's going to have so many more good years ahead of him? Is it maybe that he's just having one good year or... Do you think that he'll succeed into another good year and his value goes up? Like these are tough questions and for me, I don't know what he's gonna be like for seasons to come, but it's taken him what 6 seasons before we actually got to realize who Bennacer is after having a good year last year with Empoli. And I don't know so much about him, but in the times that I've watched him play this year, he can really control the midfield and really create a lot of opportunities. So it all depends what the management wants to do, but it's a lot of money for a player that you really didn't spend much for and can make you a big profit to help you. And
by the way, go ahead, finish.
In terms of Sergio Tonali, he's never going to want to go to Milan. It's a fucking walking dead corpse going to that team, okay? They are fucking... Oh, God.
You love Milan, I know.
You know what, man? I bet you if you're Bennacer, you want to be sold to Manchester City. Think about being wanted by Man City and you're playing for Milan. I'm like, I'm getting rid of this. Getting away from this disastrous of a team that Paolo Maldini gave his freaking heart to and they're shitting on. And it's like... I don't want to play for a team that disrespects such legendary players. And it's like, you know what, man?
Jerry seems to hate Milan more than me and Alex.
He totally does. And it's fascinating to me because, Sharma, when I first got to know Jerry, you know, it seemed like he really disliked Juventus and really disliked Inter. But then as we started getting through episode after episode, I noticed that, like, this guy can't talk about Milan for 3 seconds without calling them a piece of shit or saying fuck that. And so, like, I quickly came to realize, like, he despises Milan more than I do as an Interista, and certainly more than, like, it's crazy. And I love it. I love to harness his dark side powers against Milan, but I think it's very funny and I don't quite make sense of it.
That's what happened. You grew up with a friend who's a Milan fan and just throws all their wins at me for the last decade. And then I look back and it's like, okay, you beat Lazio. That's great. But have you achieved anything in the last decade since your last trophy win? I don't remember what the last thing they won. That's how long it's been.
What was it? 2011 Scudetto. Oh,
God, 2011, man. Jesus, what were you doing in 2011? I don't remember exactly. See?
I was probably drunk.
I wanted to say a couple of words in support of Jerry, though, because I've seen on social media you've been getting a little bit of slack for swearing and whatever your language on the podcast, but I think it's a perfect balance to Alex's, you know, sexy, polished, silky voice, and then you've got Jerry, you know, a man of the people.
I totally agree.
It's a perfect balance. So fuck you to people that are criticizing Jerry.
I totally agree. I appreciate you saying that on both counts. And real quick, before we move on to our last topic of conversation, I have what it appears to be like the smoking gun on Timo Werner to Chelsea. Fabrizio Romano tweeted this. This is all unfolding as we tape here. Timo Werner and his agents confirmed to Chelsea that they are ready to consider and agree details for the contract offered until June 2025. If Liverpool will not hijack the move, and they've done nothing official yet with Leipzig or Timo until now, he is going to accept. So I guess, like, still, it's almost like Fabrizio Romano is, like, taunting Liverpool to put together a last-second bid.
But do more something.
But more and more signs are pointing to him being about to accept Chelsea. Now, the last player I wanted to talk about, and I know that we're fortunate to have Sharma on for this episode because you've broken down this player a lot, and that is Mario Balotelli. And it's just, it's a little bit sad to me, guys, to see how things have unfolded for him at Brescia this year, because it's his hometown club and it seemed very kind of romantic and poetic when he signed with Brescia last summer. But the two sides, he and Brescia, are headed for a messy divorce. I mean, Chiellino has spelled it out over the past week that they're going to release him from his contract. It's a sad thing to see. This is not a simple story by any stretch of the imagination. Like, Balotelli has had to deal with a lot this season when it came to being, you know, a victim of some pretty nasty racist abuse from fans on the pitch. So it's been tough for him. But on the other side of that, though, he's not conducted himself like a professional, which has been, you know, a story that's followed him around for a long time. So, I mean, Sharma, how sad is it to see things breaking down with Balotelli the way that they have? And what could you maybe see his next move being? Because I've even seen him linked to the MLS this week.
Yeah, it's really sad, especially as he's the last big talent that the Inter Primavera produced, unless you count Davide Santon, which I don't.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, so it's really sad due to that fact. But, you know, a lot of people saw this coming from an early stage. So it's really not been a surprise, his career. I used to make excuses for him, you know. Obviously, some of them are quite good excuses. You know, he's had a tough upbringing and he's had to deal with a lot of racism and adversity in his life. But the guy is 29, almost 30 years old now. And they say when you have a son or a daughter, it changes you. This guy hasn't changed for jack shit. This guy is still the same. You know, this week, apparently he missed training like two or three times again. You know, it's just, he's lucky that Mino Raiola was his agent and that he's been able to get him all these big contracts every single year somehow. You know, he threw away his chance when he got his move to Liverpool. You know, that could have been a big, you know, catalyst to achieve that career that he always wanted. He used to say that I'm going to win a Ballon d'Or. I remember his quote when I think it was him and Jack Wilshere were like top one and top two in that, you know, young golden ball competition that I think is the Gazzetta run of France football. And he said, I don't know who Jack Wilshere is, but I'm going to win the Ballon d'Or one day. He's never got close to it. You know, his peak was definitely that 2012 year, that Euros, that 1 month where he looked world-class next to Cassano. But yeah, after that, it's just been a downward trajectory, which, you know, I don't think has surprised anyone. And in terms of your last question was, you know, where do you see him moving? I think, yeah, MLS or somewhere, like, they were saying before he signed for Brescia, they were saying that he pretty much agreed a deal for Flamengo or somewhere in Brazil, I'm pretty sure it was. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go somewhere left field like that, where, you know, an unexpected move where Mino Raiola, like, manages to get him another big payday.
Yeah, that's what Mino does best. Now, you know, Jerry, Balotelli has been a really interesting player to cover over the years for all the reasons that Sharma outlined. It's really been tough, though, to watch things not work out with Brescia this season. I mean, what have you made, Jerry, of his time back in Serie A this year, and where do you think he ends up next?
I think Sharma's right. His history has been a roller coaster. He's had ups and downs with Team Italy. He's had a rough stint, I believe, with Carlo Ancelotti at Manchester City, if I'm not mistaken, and he's had rifts along his path in his career, but in the last couple of years, he's been playing really good in Ligue 1 with Nice, and he's scored at a really rapid pace. He combined for over 30 goals in 2 years, so the player has shown that he can still play at a high level. I think what really has triggered this season for him was the fact that when he tried walking off the field against Hellas Verona and there was the racist chants, and Chiellino and his manager, no one spoke up for Balotelli. It was like they didn't give a shit. And they made excuses that there weren't any racist chants by the fans. They accepted the apology of Hellas Verona. It was like everybody just rubbed it underneath the carpet. And it's like, you don't have the backing from your own manager and your owner. To Balotelli, it's like, fuck you, man. You're spitting on me. Like, and with everything that's going on and with all the protests, and now looking back so many months ago and all these racist chants that are happening in Serie A matches, I think the one place that the protests should be starting is in Italy for how much abuse these players take game in and game out. And
great point.
That's where first should be starting, not in USA. I don't want to say anything wrong here, because I know that sometimes I use the wrong words, and people who do know me personally, but I support all the protests to the people who are not using violence but are using their words. And it was nice that I saw in Miami where the cops kneeled with the protesters together. And then it was on CNN. He was so passionate, one of the cops that was explaining it. And that's what we need. Imagine your owner not kneeling beside your player and not respecting how you feel. To Balotelli, now that Chiellino has called out and says that it was a mistake to bring Balotelli, I wouldn't want to go to practice. That guy there is a walking dead corpse, Chiellino. We can talk about all we want about Balotelli, but Chiellino was in jail, okay, for not paying taxes on his yacht, I believe, or I don't know what he was doing. Something so stupid. And Joseph Fischetti actually wrote a great article on Chiellino. And if anybody's interested in him, that guy's history is so whacked. He's the last person to even speak about Balotelli to criticize.
You know what's funny, Jerry, on that note, it almost feels like they're like more like most of the like Italian Serie A presidents, like more of them have been to prison than not been to prison, or suspended than not been suspended. Like it's crazy. Some of these, like the Preziosis and the Cellinos of the world, these Italian presidents are ridiculous, man.
Well, if there was a Mount Rushmore of crazy Italian presidents, Cellino's definitely on there. Cellino, yeah. Preziosi, Preziosi, Lotito, Zamparini.
Oh, yeah,
these guys are up there.
They're all bad. I'm a Lazio fan, and I'll say Lotito's corrupted. Absolutely, 100%. But these guys all have big mouths, and they don't think when they're talking. And what has Balotelli done wrong this year? He has gone to Brescia. He plays on the field. He does his thing. He's a very competitive player. I think, in respect, I haven't seen much done wrong by Balotelli. And now they're going to point out he's a bad player because he's not showing up to practices this week. Hey, man, I'm here to play for you. If you do not like how I play, if you don't respect me as an individual, why am I here then? It's not about the money. It's about you signed me to a 1-year contract to be here, or whatever his deal is. So not even a 1 year. I think it's like 2 or 3 years. But you brought me here. He got to play for his hometown. I haven't heard much from Balotelli this year where he's caused so much distraction to the club. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah,
he made like a racist joke almost in tongue-in-cheek, but it was like, you know, he was saying that Balotelli is black with anger. So in Italian, it's like, era nero. But obviously, when you read it, it seems like he's just calling him black. So, you know, he's very unneeded comments that, you know, he should be supporting Balotelli in the times of difficulty. But yeah, Jerry makes a good point that if your boss is not supporting you, then, you know, you don't really want to play for or work for him, do you?
That's a great point.
You can't look at the past. And I wrote about an article earlier this year that was it the right decision to go? He's in his hometown. This is a new start. And I think it still was a new start for him. And I think he's maturing much more as a player. The fact that he took a stance, was trying to walk off the field after the racist remarks. No other player has done that. Let's be honest, guys. I haven't seen a player other than Balotelli try to walk off the field and say, screw you, I'm done. He was going to go on protest that day. And the fact that he stood up against the owner and says, you know what? You want to talk shit? I'm not going to the game. This is a player that is trying to change as an individual. And he has the support, I believe, of Roberto Mancini, who has told him what he needs to do to get better. And Mancini has done a great job of telling him in a more respectful manner, whereas others have not. So you really need to know how to manage Balotelli, because he is a walking time bomb. And if you know his persona, the type of person he is, you need to respect that and say, okay, I need to learn how to manage an individual who is like that. So I respect Balotelli for what he's done. I have no problems with him. And I think that he was a good signing at the beginning of the year. I thought it was going to work out for him. It's unfortunate that he doesn't have the backing of his manager and ownership. And for me, I think he's going to go to MLS. And I would love to see him in Toronto. Being such a diversified, like multicultural community, it would work so well for him. It worked well for Jovinko.
Yep.
He was accepted with open arms. He had a family here. And I feel like a lot of players who are different ethnicity basically can, like, they adapt very well in Toronto. And Toronto is like one of the most multicultural cities of all. So he would fit well with the club. Greg Vanney would be able to mold him in. He'll be a great number nine up front. Can pair up well with Alejandro Pazuello. I would love to see him with TFC. That's something I would adore. And he would bring in so many ticket sales. It would boost margins, everything. It would be.
I think anywhere in Toronto has a big Italian Canadian population. I think anywhere where you have a big Italian population, whether it be Italo Canadian or Italian American, I think would be a great spot for him. And hey, guys, I've had a lot of fun on this episode. A huge thank you to Uncle Sharma for joining us. So, Mr. Sharma, where can people find your great YouTube channel? And they're probably already following you on Twitter, because everyone on Calcio Twitter is. But if not, where can they find you there?
If you type in Uncle Sharma on YouTube, I think you'll be able to find me, hopefully. My surname is very popular in India, so you might find some cricketers or some Indian singers along the way, but
I need to learn cricket. It's funny because, like, I'm a so-called professional sports broadcaster, and I can't even explain how cricket works. So maybe I need to get into that.
No, it's awful. Don't watch cricket. Yeah, oh, that's my YouTube channel. I saw you subscribed, Alex. Thank you for that. So you know where to find me on Twitter at rsharms.
And of course, you can follow Jerry at jmancini8. You can follow me at Alex Dono. And you can follow the show as well. It's at Calcio Con Pod. That's Calcio Con Pod.
Fuck
and
yeah. Whatever.
Yes. And what? And I
no, no, fuck yeah. That. Good news for Lazio. I'm just pump fisting. I had to say something eventually. Good news for Lazio, as after a knee injury scare, it's reported Sergei Milinkovic-Savic just had a simple knock in training. There were concerns that the star midfielder would be out of action for the Serie A restart later this month when he interrupted yesterday's training session early and had had ice placed on his knee. He was not present today, and many expected him to attend the Padilla clinic for tests. However, multiple sources report Milinkovic-Savic's condition improved so much over the 24 hours that a test wasn't even necessary.
Nice.
It proved to be just a knock, and the Serbian is ready to fucking beat the shit out of Juventus.
Jerry, when is the, maybe if you don't know this, maybe Sharma does. I don't have the fixture list in front of me for Lazio or Juve, but it's coming up pretty soon, right? Well, when is the Lazio-Juventus match? Do you know?
On a Monday, and I believe, okay, open up, you stupid app. Get it right now. Sorry, I had to say that, man. I decided to go on World Football Italia.
No, listen, I'm glad you got that in there before we're done, because that way we get to put it in the episode. But do you know when they're meeting, when their head-to-head is?
It is on July 20 at 3:45 our time. Nice. So that's 9:45 in Italy. Yeah. Nice. Monday evening, people. Afternoon, wherever you are, showdown. Where Savic and Alberto are going to have a field day in that midfield.
Give them hell.
Over that piece of shit, Rabiot. I hate that guy so much. I wish he played for Inter, just so I can see Conte.
I'd rather not. No, please.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Well, listen.
No, we don't want cancer.
We already got rid of Icardi. We're good. So, and we would welcome people, whatever platform you listen to this show on, if you could leave us a 5-star rating, it would go a long way. So, for Jerry and for Uncle Sharma, I'm Alex Dono. We'll talk to you guys next time on the Calcio Connection podcast. Ciao.